Two personalities debating today's biggest geek topics. This is Project Nerds Versus.
Welcome, 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 pro nerds, to another episode of Versus, our first video episode of Versus here on Project Nerd. I am Iggy, and I am joined by...
Tyler. And you mean we weren't being recorded prior to this? I thought we were... Okay, well, you need to tell me these things. I thought there was video everywhere.
We were doing audio beforehand, so we were technically being recorded.
Listen, you were recording my beautiful face and not sharing it with the world. I'm upset, but it's
keeping
fine.
It for it's myself. Fine. Keeping it for myself. But for those of you that are just joining us, if you're not familiar with Versus, Tyler and I obviously are known for arguing on the Nerdcast, so we decided to take it to the side and argue right here on Versus. We've actually done quite a bit of agreeing the first couple episodes.
I gotta be honest with you. I feel like you've done a poor job of picking categories because I haven't had an opportunity to tell you how wrong you are recently, and it upsets me. So we may just have to like do some throwback, talk about, you know, I don't know, Batman and Robin or something of the like. I don't know.
It's watchable.
We have to go back and just do a great, we'll have to do a greatest hits of like Nerdcast arguments and be like, let's go back in the vault and find this one thing that Iggy was super wrong about. It'll be fun.
Fair enough. Fair enough. But in the meantime, there's a lot of things happening. So Tyler, why don't you get us started with our first bit of news?
Because it's one of my favorite topics of all time. Spider-Man. So Sony and Marvel have already pretty much been number one when it comes to headlines this week and pop culture and nerd news because they've been teasing, and then finally maybe tease, but not really revealing the title of one Spider-Man 3. So on Tuesday, Tom Holland, Jacob Batalon, and Zendaya were releasing basically teaser images on their Instagrams, like their social media, of possible title cards for Spider-Man with what they thought they were told the title was. So we had Holland sharing one that said Spider-Man Phone Home. Jacob shared one that was called Spider-Man Home Wrecker. Zendaya shared one that was Spider-Man Home Slice. And they were really nice, like obviously title cards all in different colors. I think maybe teasing some things about what might be in this next version. All three of those, obviously not the title. They're not calling it Phone Home or Home Slice. But after all that teasing, then they released a little teaser. I don't even know what you would call it because it was definitely them not in character. They were playing themselves, going to talk to the director to straighten things out. And then got another fake title. But then on the way out, we see on the whiteboard the actual title. So officially, Spider-Man 3 is called Spider-Man No Way Home, keeping in obviously the theme of homecoming and far from home, now No Way Home. He's also getting farther from home each time, which is, it's getting kind of dark, but the title obviously keeps the home thing in theme, feels a little bit more on brand than Phone Home, but now we have our title. When do we get more? Where's our trailer, Iggy? Where's our trailer?
I don't know. I know you're eager for it. We've talked a lot of news over the past few months for Spider-Man. This was pretty exciting, and it was weird how it played out. I mean, you mentioned some things. One is that they did their teasers, and then Holland was on Jimmy Fallon last night, and it seemed like ultimate place for your first, like, maybe actual teaser trailer. Because like you said, the teaser that's going around right now on the internet is them as actors trying to figure out the title. But I feel like we're getting closer and closer and closer. It's holidays, right? We're looking around holidays for the new Spider-Man movie.
Have they re-finalized the release date at this point? I honestly do not know the answer to that question. I've just stopped looking at release dates for movies. They come out when they come out at this point. Time is a flat circle. It has no meaning. And any release date until... I won't trust a release date for at least another year. I got to be honest with you. So
that's fair.
Unless it's an HBO Max release of some kind, possibly.
Okay.
Or a Netflix release or a Disney Plus release.
Good point. So at some point we assumed a 2021 release. We'll go with that. So I feel like we got to have a trailer soon, at least a teaser. I feel like with all that we've been teased of who's going to be in it, who's not in it, how this ties to other ones, just a clip showing somebody would be something that would get the like nerds just crazy on the internet. I don't know. What do you think? Yeah.
Wikipedia is telling me it's December 17th. So
okay.
That's believable. Okay. The only reason I would say it won't come out on December 17th is because if any other Marvel stuff has to get pushed, because we still have other Marvel movies, Marvel franchises that have to get their things primarily Black Widow. How much Black Widow ties into the rest of the MCU going forward, I don't know, because they've definitely teased No Way Home as kind of the first of the new phase. Like, WandaVision's kind of leading into what's going to be the new phase. So we'll see. But I don't know. I'm excited. Obviously, Spider-Man is my jam. And, like, I want to see – it could be the biggest mess in the history of the world, or it could be the coolest thing ever. But if any of the rumors are to be believed, if we're really going to get Alfred Molina as Doc Ock, and we're really going to get Jamie Foxx back as a different version of Electro, and Doctor Strange, and possibly other Spider-Mans from other multiverses, you know, maybe – as an
possible Daredevil.
I don't even know at this point. So, like, you know what? I'm just on board. It could be awesome. It could be bad. It could be a party. John Watts has done some cool stuff. I don't know. I want to see it. I don't care. There's nothing that's going to stop me from seeing it. The last, both of the Spider-Mans prior to this that were, you know, the Sony Marvel kind of collaboration have been fantastic, so I have no reason to believe that this one's going to let us down. So I'm on board. Let's do it.
All right.
I feel like if December is the target, I mean, I would think that when's D24 this year?
I don't. That's probably as
that's
up
another
in
thing.
The air
like
as movie
conventions don't have dates anymore either. Let's see. Will the interwebs tell me the D24 date? So, I mean, unless I don't know when Disney's next, I don't know. When is Black Widow? Is Black Widow this manner? I would say at the latest, it'll be a trailer at the beginning of Black Widow. How about that?
That's my call.
I'm making that call.
Okay. That seems like April, May right now, but you did bring up a really good point that movie dates right now are just so Black Widow could be months now. We already saw Sony push James Bond back to the fall, so I don't know. But we're talking MCU.
As long as I get Dune, I don't even care. I just need Dune.
Right.
All I need in my life. All right, I'm sorry. Let's do it. More MCU.
Let's talk it. We're talking MCU, so we're not the only one talking about it. Wesley Snipes, while doing interviews for Coming to America, was talking about Blade. Obviously, Mahershala Ali, I think, is going to be a good fit. After I prepped for this episode, too, something else to tie into this topic. Rumors now that MCU Blade is going to be PG-13 also dropped today. But Wesley Snipes kind of seems cold about it. And he even talked about how he would welcome a cameo, but he's not looking for it. And that he's working on two projects and called them Blade Killer projects, a woman-led action movie, and then one that he calls, quote, Blade on steroids. So are they going to make something that's going to put Blade to shame, or will the PG-13 rating put Blade to shame on its own? What do you think?
Listen, I love Wesley Snipes, and I believe that Blade and Wesley Snipes in particular do not get nearly enough credit for kind of launching the new wave of superhero movies. Outside of like Batman in the 90s, like, people forget before Bryan Singer and X-Men, before Spider-Man, before even like that weird ass Spawn movie, like Blade was the movie that like launched comic book movies again. It made a lot of money for that time. It wasn't super critically acclaimed like some of the later ones like Spider-Man and X-Men were, but it got comic books, people back in the theater to see comic book movies. And it was cool. And it was action packed. It spawned two sequels. Like, they made three of the damn things. They had to have done well. But no, I mean, Snipes is amazing. He's done some really cool projects as of late. I really liked him in, I'm assuming he's going to be fantastic in the new Coming to America sequel. He was really good in, Dolomite. I really enjoyed him a great deal. But I don't believe that anything, I mean, saying that he's doing a Blade Killer is the equivalent of coming out. It's basically him saying coming out, like, we're going to make two movies that are going to blow Marvel movies out of the water, which I'll believe it when I see it. No one is doing that yet. DC is the only person who even has a chance of doing that, and they failed at it. Any of other comic book franchises from independent comics, while I have enjoyed many of them, no one's killing a Marvel movie. Sorry. Try again.
Fair enough. He did say that his original Blade movies was White Belt, I believe is what he called it, action, and that this new movie he's working on is Black Belt action. My question is, what does he mean by new movie he's working on? Like, that Wesley Snipes getting a little, he's getting closer, you know, closer to the, he's, we'll just say it this way. He's closer to our parents' age than he is our age. And I don't see my parents doing a black belt action movie. Then again, they don't have the personal trainers that Hollywood actors can get, but I don't know if he's working on something behind the scenes and he's got something going, but I don't know. I'm more worried after all of this kind of developed for it to start to leak out that because Blade, the new Blade, is going to be tied into the MCU franchise, that it's looking at a PG-13 rating. And I mean, that alone, we've talked about it on past Nerdcasts. We've discussed it in other arenas. It's some of these characters, Moon Knight's a great example, as they're dropping a series for them. The Netflix series, the Defenders series, those aren't meant to be PG to PG-13 action. And we've gotten further and further. There's some great action in the MCU movies so far. I don't want to dismiss that, but that alone makes me a little bit worried about Blade and made me more curious of what Snipes is doing. Whether it's actually a Blade Killer movie, I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. I'll believe it when I see it. And I don't even know that I'll believe it then. But I also, and I mean, the only reason the one reason that surprises me is we've definitely heard rumblings from various sources inside of Marvel that say that when they fold Deadpool in, he will continue to be rated R.
Right.
I mean, I feel like Blade needs that treatment to really be done justice, but
right.
We shall see.
Agree. All right.
Easy. Wow, let's talk more things owned by Disney. It's easy. Like, that's all we end up doing. Disney owns the world. We're all just living in it. So it's been, God, this makes me feel old, 16 years since Republic Commando came out on PlayStation. What else did it come out? What else systems 16 years ago?
Anyway, PC and Xbox 16 years ago.
Was it just Xbox? Okay. So Republic Commando came out 16 years ago. This April, we're supposed to be getting basically a re-release of it on PlayStation and Nintendo. We kind of, in what the publisher is calling it, basically major updates for modern playability. So it's not necessarily a new game as it is a game that we played 16 years ago, but
right.
Let me tell you, I don't know if anyone's noticed or not, but remastering games is the new hotness now. Between Mass Effect, now we're getting Diablo 2 remastered, which
I'll go downstairs and play some Tony Hawk right now. Like, I'll go downstairs.
Tony Hawk, the remastered, was fantastic. The BlizzCon announcement of Diablo 2 remastered seems strange to me when you're trying to sell people Diablo 4, but it is what it is. Let's move on, because Diablo 2 is the best. But we talked kind of earlier in our very first Versus episode, we talked about Disney is finally breaking up the Star Wars gaming monopoly. They're not, like, EA no longer has the exclusive rights to make Star Wars deals. This is the first... Is this the first move, or should we just expect many more years of Star Wars video games on this front? I mean, here's the thing. Republic Commando is a great game, and I'm excited to play a remaster of it, but I would prefer, you know, new games.
That's fair. I'm interested to see what this is going to look like on a current-gen system. And by current-gen, I don't know. PS4 or PS5. Nintendo Switch, obviously, is where it's going to Nintendo. It's something. I mean, I think it's hard. It's maybe it's EA, you know, holding on to what they can and just re-releasing what they still have the rights to or something. If that's the case here, I don't even know. I might be talking out of my ass, but it's something, and we need a something before we get to the other things, right? So I don't know how excited to be for this one, because like you said, we're just kind of remastering everything. Our childhood is not safe from anything, and I can't really speak to that because the amount of retro shoes I own, I bought Tony Hawk 1 and 2, all of these things, but I'll play it on the PlayStation. I'll see what it's like, but I feel like it's only going to make me more eager for what else is to come. And all those announcements you mentioned, it was episode 1, so what, like 4 or 5 weeks ago we got those announcements. So those other titles that they announced for video games are still years out. So we've got a while.
Yeah. I did look just to edify myself. It was an Xbox exclusive. Right, here's the one thing I will give it credit for when it's moving to PlayStation and Switch is it's only going to be $15, which if I have one complaint about a lot of the remasters that have come out specifically from Nintendo, like re-releasing games 20 years later that cost $10 more than they did when they came out the first time.
Right.
is this one is not, we're mistitling. It's not a remaster like some of these things are. It's just a re-release of a game with some like tweaks here and there. But for $15, yeah, go, I'll go nuts. Now, if you're trying to sell it to me for $60, that becomes a different conversation, or even $30, you know. So,
right.
And it was a good game. The other thing is they've made it very clear it's only the single player campaign. It doesn't include any of the multiplayer. Not that any of the multiplayer in Republic Commando was like groundbreaking, but it was multiplayer, and multiplayer is fun.
But we're in a multiplayer era right now.
Like, listen, this is
of multiplayer.
I don't know. We'll see. For $15, I might pick it up. I mean, I can't make fun, like, the number of games I own on my, like, just my Steam account alone that I've never played that I spent $15 or less on. I can't. If it's under $20, there's a really good chance I'm going to pick it up, no matter what.
and maybe get to it.
That's exactly what it is. So,
all right. Well, we've talked a lot of Disney, so we'll move on. But we're going to go comics. We all of us here at Project Nerd love the Ninja Turtles. Kevin Eastman's one of our guys. Can't wait to get back in the convention scene and do more panels with him. As of right now, he is actually on the creative team for what's been a popular miniseries last year and then a huge miniseries this year, The Last Ronin story arcs. So story goes, IDW received so many pre-orders for issue one, they were only able to fulfill about 33% of those. Knowing that, they amped up the printing for episode two, and sure enough, same amount of requests. So the number two issue of The Last Ronin is IDW's most selling comic of all time, which is huge news while we're in a era of where comics seem to be dying. So I don't know. I guess I'm just excited about this, so I wanted to bring it up, but I'll throw some questions your way, Tyler. One, how exciting is it that it's Ninja Turtles breaking records, especially for IDW? We do love ourselves some IDW. Two, does this signal anything positive for what's ahead for comic books?
I hope so. I mean, so the number of print, like, I think the number for this one was well over 130,000, which these days is any comic book that makes it into six digits is killing it.
Yeah.
And I mean, that's impressive as hell, especially obviously IDW has been around for a long time, and Ninja Turtles are obviously, they're the Ninja Turtles. So, I mean, they're going to sell copies regardless, especially when you're doing something as cool as The Last Ronin story. The art in it is fantastic. The story is fun. Like, it's a really, just the covers for them. And I mean, everyone that's working on them, obviously you mentioned Eastman's working on them. Laird has been working on them. Waltz is, I mean, like all the names attached to it have been amazing. It is definitely exciting. I don't know that it's necessarily like a bellwether for the rest of the comics industry. I don't know how much a cool limited edition Ninja Turtles issue selling out like that is for comics as a whole, but I don't know. Maybe it's something to turn around. I mean, maybe people are ready to come back. I mean, it's such a weird, anytime you try to, you put a number to these things, it's hard to, I tried to explain to someone the other day just how big comic books were in the early 90s. And I don't think you can quite land it with someone who doesn't get it. Like, you go back to like early 90s. What was it? What's the best selling comic of all time? X-Men Volume 2, Issue 1, something like that. 98. Yeah. Sold like 8 million copies.
Right.
Like 8 million copies. And now we're like celebrating someone who's selling 130,000. But like we're talking 30 years ago. Like, it's a different world. It's different. But I mean, this is not bad news. I just don't know that it's necessarily an indicator of like, comics are coming back, everyone. So.
Yeah. Yeah, that's fair. And you're right. You're exactly when in the height of the 90s when we're collecting. I don't know if you remember those half issues from Wizard and things like that. Those runs were like a quarter of a million, right?
How many foil holographic zero edition bullshit I have in a closet somewhere?
Yeah. Right. But those limited editions, like you mentioned, those were still a couple hundred thousand, and they were limited, and the resale value immediately on those was insane. The thing is right now, to get your hands on The Last Ronin issue one, even the second printing is nuts right now. I tried to go back and grab it because I was late to the game on the first issue. Luckily, I swooped in right now, grabbed issue two. We're talking week one, first run, 130,000, which is huge. That's big for Marvel and DC right now. And like you said, I think a big part of it is you've got the some of the original players and key players on the creative team. You mentioned Laird and Eastman, and you have people that are familiar with these characters. But you're also letting Raphael be Raphael. Like, if you really get into the gritty bit of it, the story, like, you're letting it go that direction. The strongest piece of the TMNT animated movie was that, letting Raphael be Raphael, right? So I agree with you. This kind of stands isolated. I'm hoping, though, this, with a combination of, we were just talking about him before we started recording, Brian K. Vaughan, Saga, his second half of the, you know, his second half of the saga, I guess would be a way to put it, is going to start up again this year. Amazing series that is really popular as well. DC is cutting back on titles, but I think that can allow them to get better about being creative with the titles they have and do things like The Last Ronin. Like you talked about, just look at those covers and just read the synopsis. And as a Ninja Turtles fan, you want it. When you see 30 different Batman titles coming out every month, as a Batman fan, it's hard to find something. So I don't know if numbers-wise this is going to mean something, but I'm kind of hoping this is one of many steps that was already planned that's going to lead to a bit of resurgence in the storytelling of comics, if that makes sense. I want to see that, just those stories that made us buy in, because right now, most of that story creation is being invested in the big screen or even the little screen from these publishers, you know, parent companies or partner companies.
Yeah, I think you're right. And I went and looked just to kind of give myself like a litmus test. Obviously, everyone in the top 20 or whatever is either a DC or a Marvel title. But I looked, right, and obviously last year is not a great indicator, but the best-selling single issue of a comic book last year was issue one of the relaunch of Wolverine when Logan came back. And it sold 196,000 copies, which means IDW
across multi prints, multi runs.
All of last year. So I'm assuming that's the single. I mean, all of last year. So 196,000, which means this comic is in that neighborhood, and that's a Marvel comic with a marquee character on the cover.
Wolverine, yeah.
A relaunch issue one of the five comics that were the. I mean, obviously, all of these came out in January, February, or March for the top five. But obviously the rest of 2020, like, people just stopped selling comics and stopped buying comics and stopped leaving the house. But we've got Wolverine number one, Thor, the relaunch of Thor number one, the relaunch of Spider-Man number one, the new Star Wars comic that started last year number one, and then Wonder Woman 750. And of those, only four of them were over 100,000. Everything else on the list is under. So, I mean, this is not nothing. Like I said, last year is not the greatest like year to use, but 130,000 comics is not nothing, especially from a publisher that's not Marvel and DC. So
no, yeah,
it might be a bigger deal that I may have short sold it now that I'm looking at some of the numbers.
IDW is celebrating for sure. All right, Tyler, take us away.
It's the highest selling comic that IDW has ever had in a single print.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah, a single run too. All right,
single run. All right. So we talked about a little bit just because they ran 1,000 commercials during the Super Bowl, but Paramount has officially announced that its new Nickelodeon movie, SpongeBob, Sponge on the Run, will premiere day and date on Paramount Plus next week, when it was also expected to hit all the other video on demand platforms and some theaters. I don't know how many theaters they're planning on opening it in, but they were going to put it in theaters. This, in a sense, is basically they've now glommed onto what Warner Brothers HBO is doing with the HBO Plus model. We talk about this a lot. We literally talk about it almost every episode since COVID happened. But is this going to be the norm for 2021? Are more and more titles going to get pushed to these streaming services, synergy verticals, like it's here and here and it's 15 places all at once and you just get it where you get it? Or is this just, you know, Paramount, Viacom testing the waters to see if it's going to work?
Right. I think what's huge here is that it's going on March 4th to Paramount Plus for anybody that's paying already for CBS All Access or when it turns to Paramount Plus. At the same time, you can go onto another platform, Amazon, Vudu, wherever, and spend what probably going to be $19.99 to get it for a 24, 48 hour window. It's insane what studios are doing now to push their own streaming platform. And it's funny because in my day job, I deal with a lot of these things, and Paramount Plus is all we're talking about all day, every day right now, because it is a big, big deal. And Paramount is putting everything behind it. You mentioned like a million Super Bowl ads, and the Super Bowl was on CBS, but those are high dollar slots. You know, even in this past year, there's still high dollar commercial slots. And I think it's big for Paramount to sit here and say, we're all in like Warner. So I don't know. You mentioned a few options, and I think your option of it feels like it's, I think that's what we're going to see for the next year, is it's just going to spray wherever, like people, like certain studios are just going to throw it here, they're going to throw it there, wherever they can make money back on this and get back to promoting the new stuff that they should be promoting for late 2021, early 2022. And if it means hitching onto their own platform and getting a few other subscribers, I can see that being a thing. We did get extensive into it in our test recording episode, the one that we didn't end up actually airing. And that's the one where we talked about that if this kind of works, I can really see this being a huge deal, to where we see a lot of studios do it for sure.
Yeah. I think this, and I've said this every time we've had this conversation about a specific title where it's not necessarily indicative of like everything as a whole. And I think this one fits that bill in the sense that there is a couple things about this one that make it a little bit different than some of these other like same day and date releases. Number one, it's definitely something they're using to push out the launch of Paramount Plus. Like, right. They're still trying. I mean, this is still, I would think, almost like this is their doorbuster sell. This is their loss leader. This is get people to subscribe, get them in the doors, and understand what Paramount Plus is. As someone who already subscribes to CBS Plus, I'm still not CBS All Access. I'm still not entirely sure what the different, like, is there going to be more? Because there's already a ton of stuff on CBS All Access. I don't know that they're necessarily adding stuff, or if it's just mostly a rebrand. For as far as I can tell, I mean, here's the thing. I subscribe to CBS All Access for two reasons. One is to, if I can't get it elsewhere, I can watch my Chiefs games live on CBS. And right. Two, all of the Star Wars. That's basically it. I get all Star Trek.
That was bad.
All things Star Trek and NFL and AFC to NFL football games. That's kind of what I'm here for. So, but yeah, that's one of them. Number two, and we've talked about this ad nauseum when it comes to streaming services, it's a kids movie. And kids movies don't play by the same rules as normal movies, especially when there's a lot of kids still stuck at home. I think there's a lot of parents who are more than willing to pony up whatever's necessary to put them in front of a television and get them to watch something for an hour and a half. So I think that's part of it. Like, we talked about this a little bit with Disney Plus, where they were able to make a significant amount of money off of the re-release, like the live action version of Mulan. Like, people paid extra on top of their Disney Plus subscription to watch it. Right. But that was a little bit different because we were in the depths of like quarantine at that point. But kids movies, time and time again, we've learned at our own peril that G-rated kids movies with a built-in audience do not play by the same rules as literally any other movie on the planet. So, but at the same time, like you said, like, you got to do whatever you can to get money back on these investments, because so many of these shows, so many of these movies, they've been in the can for years. Like, money's been spent on production already. We got to do something. And if that means taking a hit and hopefully getting a few bucks off of Amazon and iTunes while driving people to your streaming service, maybe that's what you got to do. So,
right. Right. I think a big thing you point out, and it's something we have said, it's the matter of how much do you pay for CBS All Access? What is the monthly fee on that?
I pay for it through my Apple TV Plus subscription. Okay. And I believe I get it and Showtime together, and it's like 10 bucks.
Okay. I think. So pay for 1 month of that as opposed to...
I used to pay for them separately, but yeah, I pay 10 bucks and get to watch it, whatever, and then whatever else is on there. So,
and you get it all month, exactly, with all of the SpongeBob stuff, including a new SpongeBob show that they're launching for this. And to answer your question, it is mostly a rebranding, and within the rebranding, they're really going to focus on the channels. Like, really, this is Nick at Night, Nickelodeon type content. So they're really going to, but it is going to be mostly the same content.
And they've done a good job of pushing like CBS All Access exclusive stuff. Like, I know a lot of people signed up just to watch like Picard. I was excited about that. A lot of people recently just signed up literally just to watch The Stand. And there's a lot of people who sign up just to watch old shows. Like, I know a lot of people who subscribe because the same way that Peacock pulled back a lot of their shows, CBS pulled back a lot of their shows.
Right.
There are people I know who subscribe to CBS All Access specifically just so they can watch old episodes of Frasier. So.
That's which we're on. It's on Peacock, also Frasier, which is crazy. So
is it really? Because it's on CBS All Access and
Hulu.
In these days, where like we said, kid stuff, having access to the entire Nickelodeon back catalog's not nothing.
No, that's.
I mean, sure. I can watch an episode. I could queue up an episode of "Are You Afraid of the Dark" or "Hey Arnold" right now if I want. So
that's fair. But let's stay focused on the theater part of this. So, because the big news this week too was that Cinemark is starting to close theaters ahead of really getting back into it. And we've focused so much on AMC with their money troubles and not talked a lot about Cinemark and what would happen here. And the significance of this is of the three locations they're closing, one of them is in Chicago, and it's right next to Northwestern. And it is one of the top 10 grossing theaters in the greater Chicago area. Closed, done, finished, not coming back even after the pandemic. So this is huge. So the question is, and I guess we can play it by percentage. We're going to do a little guessing game and be quick on this one. How many theaters are going to not ever open their doors again or are done before we ever get back to a new normal or normal theater going experience?
Half.
Oh, wow. Okay.
I mean, the thing is people, I don't think people appreciate, who are in like smaller markets, smaller towns, not big metros, appreciate this. Like most of the independent movie theaters have already closed. Like there are,
right.
There are movie theaters that have been closed since like week two of the pandemic. Like not being able to get people in seats for a week was enough to drive them under. Like, I don't think people appreciate, like, I mean, we know it's the bit, we talk about the business of movie theaters and movies in general a lot here, but it's a razor thin margin game, especially if you need to, if you're trying to show the big ticket, if you're trying to show the next new Disney movie,
right.
You're signing a lot of rights away. You're signing a lot of contracts. It's a rough business. And if you're not an AMC or a Cinemark or a draft house or whoever, it's not great for you. But yeah, a lot of independent, a lot of small, a lot of single screen, double screen theaters have already closed. We've talked ad nauseum about, hey, AMC is close. I would be unsurprised if there are half as many screens available to show movies in the United States when this is all shaken out. And it may take more than just the end of the pandemic to shake out because of just, you know, inertia. And you say the Cinemark, like they ran their, some of their biggest ones. I would assume, knowing what I know about how some of those places work, like you said, like I know the location of that one Cinemark location. I guarantee those three highest grossing ones are also probably had their highest like rent overhead of any of their movies.
That's fair.
Probably
that's
had the fair. Most screens, probably had the most staff, and definitely had the highest rent. So if none of your theaters are making money, then you got to cut the ones that cost the most to keep the rent up on, I guess.
That's fair. 50%, I was like, it's crazy, but damn, you made a good argument. You made a good argument, Tyler. So I thought we could argue here. I will say somewhere in that 35 to 40% just to be different from you, but your points are valid. And we've brought it up, like you said, in previous shows and other series. Me here, and you are in Kansas City, right where AMC is everywhere, but me here, even in Denver suburbs, I, within 10 minutes, not only do I have my draft house that I do like to go to, I have three AMC choices, and I had two Cinnabar choices, which we joke as around here as the poor man's draft house. The Cinnabars have already shuttered for good, like you said. And that's what you just mentioned. They are a chain that is known in certain areas, but not nationally. And they're gone. Like the signs are pulled, everything from it. I wouldn't be surprised. There's no reason to have those three AMCs. One of them's 24 screens, 16 screens, and I think 18 screens. Like, yeah, there's no reason for all three of those to stay open after the end of this year. So I concede your argument is strong, yeah. And I probably agree with you now.
The only reason I would say, and like the one thing I will say, the one addendum I'll make where I could see them having the number not go that low is because whatever franchise, whatever chain is left standing, or some deep pocket company tries to come in after the fact and buy up all the closed theaters at a discount, I could see that happening.
Right.
Also, with enough theaters closed down, this might finally be the time that we see some of the regulations on who can own a theater get relaxed a bit. And all of a sudden the content producers now own the theaters and it becomes a whole new thing. So,
right.
But if all things being equal, I think 50% is a pretty reasonable expectation.
Okay. I'll give you that. All right, Tyler, hey, let's get into it.
Spoiler time. Spoiler time. We got to talk WandaVision. Because WandaVision's all that anyone cares about right now. It's all I care about. Fair warning. We said it. It says it on the screen. I'm saying it right now. These are spoilers. These are spoilers. Things happen this week, like they do every week on WandaVision. If you have not watched the new episode, spoilers. Full right. Stop.
Okay.
I'm going to start spoiling now.
All right.
Big twist. I mean, I think a lot of people saw it coming. Agnes is actually Agatha Harkness. I can't talk. For those familiar with the comic, Agatha was like Scarlet Witch's teacher in some versions, good friend. She was also the nanny for the Fantastic Four, which a lot of people thought maybe this would be their way in. Mm-hmm. In this one, she's obviously a bad guy, or at least she's being framed as the villain. She has her own cool, catchy theme song. It's very poppy. It's on Apple Music and Spotify now if you want to listen to it in its entirety. It's fantastic. Listen, I've always also been a big fan of let Catherine Hahn be in all the things and do whatever she wants because she's brilliant and amazing. But should we have seen this twist coming? And how do we think the payoff this week will be in the finale?
Well, I think we should definitely have seen a twist coming because we spent the first half of the season, setting it up to like, is Wanda the bad guy? And we can't have her as the bad guy, right? Like she's not going to be the bad guy here. So we needed some way to where it was something that was driving her, you know, invoking her emotions and pushing her to be more controlling and crazy about this. And obviously, I mean, really, when you look at it, you can go search the internet right now too. There's a lot of great articles out there about what WandaVision is showing for grief, what grief drives people to do and be. And so I think there's a lot deeper there with Wanda, and it's going to kind of be taken out and just be shallow again because she's going to be the villain of it. And you're right. In the comics, she's not normally the villain. She's not always the good guy, right? And I did see it as a possible door because when I first heard that name, that's what I thought of was the Richards kid. I don't even remember what their name of their baby was, but like her sole purpose for a period there in the Marvel universe was to just protect that child, right? And so
Franklin,
thank you. Yes. And so it's, I think, a big deal that she's introduced. I would like to see her character get out of just this season, not only just this series, but even the season. I want to see something happen with Agatha Harkness and lead into, you know, the
here's the thing. Is she the ultimate bad guy?
I don't know.
I think there's more to come. I think there's more to come here because they show her like in her little like reveal sequence. There's all these like camera behind the camera, behind the camera, behind the scenes right. of her doing this or manipulating that or doing that. But is it nefarious? Is it specifically, is she the bad guy? I mean, I still think there's obviously more to come on this Tyler douchebag. I think he's probably the baddest of the bad guys in this whole thing. I don't like him. The new director of S.W.O.R.D., he sucks. He's been doing some things. I don't like it. But I don't think the twists are done yet. I think there's more to come. I think that she may not necessarily turn out to be like the big bad. She's obviously done some things and been doing some things, and they're not great. But I don't know. I'm excited. I love the show. I love all the fun little weird things it does. I love how it plays with all these cool sitcom conventions. Just the bits with Darcy and Vision this week were inspired, whether it be him sitting in front of the thing doing right. the interview.
I did like that.
Documentary style to the whole like shtick of them not being able to cross that one street in the middle of nowhere. The whole thing is just fun and I'm on board for it. So I don't want to know what's going to happen. I'm excited to be surprised by it. So,
all right. We'll find out soon.
I'm going out on a limb and saying that Agatha may not be the big bad.
Okay. All right. We disagree on it. I want you to be right, but I think I'm going to disagree with you. So, all right, we're tight on time and we've covered our big topics. As always, we've got some quick hits.
Let's go quick.
So let's run down them. I don't know if you saw this week. I know it's not as big in the Midwest, but down south and especially the West Coast. And I know you personally were a fan of them as well. Fry's Electronics. All gone. Every single location closed. If you had the chance to get to any of their California stores, so many of them were themed and really cool. But I didn't even know this was a thing. For the past couple of years, they've been like on consignment even. And so most of their shelves have been empty, but they're done. Another brick and mortar hits. Apparently this was a thing that was going to happen, pandemic or not. Sad to see them go.
Yeah. I mean, they were them and I mean, Best Buy is the last one standing. It was them, Circuit right. City, and Best Buy. I don't know. This has been a long time coming. Anyone who's right. been inside of Fry's on the West Coast in the last 5 years has, like you said, seen empty shelf after empty shelf. And if you asked any employees, they were like, well, with this, they always had excuses, but it was always like moving. They were always moving stock from one store to another to make it look like they weren't all going out of business. But apparently this has been the worst kept secret in retail for quite some time. So I'm surprised it honestly, it took this long for the shoe to drop. So Netflix has been doing documentary after documentary lately. The new one dropping next week is about our man Biggie, the Notorious B.I.G., and it's supposed to be painfully honest about a number of things. Things Faith Evans already is angry about. Are you going? I mean, I don't. This is a dumb question, but are you going to watch it? You're going to watch it.
Biggie's my dude. But I do. I'm really interested too because it does drop this coming Monday, March. Or maybe Sunday, it was March 1st, maybe, or that is Monday, excuse me. But yeah, apparently, was it the summer when some of the stuff leaked out and Faith Evans was furious because she gave them access under the impression that it wasn't going to cover certain things like affairs and Lil' Kim relationship and all that type of stuff. And it did. Dude, he would have been 49 this year, man. I can't believe how young he went. And he's such a legend. I'm really interested to see what they have to say. Because we've seen some documentaries that include him. I don't feel like anything directly targeted at him to this level. And we've seen some movies that supposedly tell a story. This looks like we could get to know the most of it. I don't know.
I'm interested to see it. Like, knowing that he would have been 49 this year just makes me feel old because All right. He wasn't that much older than we are. So,
no. All right.
But yeah, I mean, I'm excited to see it. So, talk to me about this one because I want to get angry about it real fast. Even though it's a quick hit, it's going to be quick anger.
Okay. You mentioned DC movies earlier. So Angel Manuel Soto is going to direct a DC Comics Latin superhero film, Enter Blue Beetle. Are we excited for this? I don't know. It doesn't sound like you are. And is this Booster Gold's entrance into the DCEU scene?
Who the fuck knows? Who cares? Listen, I'm over it. I'm done. Like, I'm done talking about it. I'm done being angry about it. I'm done complaining about Jeff Johns. I'm done complaining about Zack Snyder, just whatever. Just go off in a corner somewhere and make movies, and maybe once one of them comes out and is good again, I will give you a chance. But the next thing I have to expect from you is a 4-hour black and white movie that I've already seen once and didn't like then. And I'll tell you what I saw when I saw it was, you know what would make this better? It being twice as long. So whatever. Just first of all, I like Angel Manuel Soto a lot, and I would really love to see him make a movie. But if this is anything like every other DC movie they've announced in the last 2, 5, 7, 10 years, he's the first of 7 directors before filming actually starts. So who the fuck knows?
Good point. I wrote this next one apparently on our
screen. I know you did. I'm excited to read it. It's in my color, but it's definitely you. So I'm going to bring it up because of how much crap we give you constantly for your love of Matthew McConaughey rom-coms. I want to be clear. We do not give you crap about your love of Matthew McConaughey rom-coms. We give you crap about your love of shitty Matthew McConaughey rom-coms. Specifically, your love of Fool's Gold, which might be the worst of all of them. I'll watch Failure to Launch and all day if I don't have to watch Fool's Gold ever again. So, but anyway, it has now come out that Jared Leto has said he's ready for his own rom-com phase, and he claims he will, quote, be the opposite McConaissance. So who are you casting in your romantic comedy, McConaughey or Leto?
I'm McConaughey all the way. This was, I wanted to see who you were casting, but I'm ready for Fool's Gold 2. Fool's Gold 2.
Yeah, Electric, I mean, let's be clear. As much as I give you crap for, liking Fool's Gold, which is bad, and it's hard for it to be bad. I love him, and I love Kate Hudson. It's really terrible. But I've also, on this podcast, not this podcast, but on the Nerdcast, said many times, I'm 100% done with Jared Leto just being in movies. Like, he's been the worst thing in so many movies over the last few years. And, like, not that he's 100% been the worst thing in them. He was the worst thing in the new Blade Runner movie. He was the worst thing in the Suicide Squad movie. He's probably going to be one of the worst things in the new, shittier version of Justice League. Who knows? Go back to making music. I actually kind of dug your music, and I did dig some of your early movie phases, but whatever it is you've been doing for the last like 5 or 6 years in movies, I'm over it. I'm done with it. Please stop putting
this is Club.
It isn't. What's the other one that he's got? Does he have another?
The Little Things just came out, and it's actually pretty good. But that leans heavy on Rami Malek and Denzel Washington. He's kind of the other guy.
I don't care how bad you are. You can't make a Denzel Washington movie bad. Like, that's impossible.
right. That's
it. I don't care how. You can try as hard as you want. Denzel's going to carry that shit. So, although I did read a lot of articles during like the press of that, where Denzel made it clear that he didn't have time for any of Leto's like method bullshit, like was not like having any of it. So
I believe it. Let's change course on the last quick hit. Let's talk all the Disney Plus dates that dropped. So March 19th, The Falcon and the Winter Soldier. March 26th, The Mighty Ducks Game Changers. If you haven't seen that trailer, watch it. April 16th.
Listen, Lauren Graham and Emilio, come on, let's do it.
April 16th, Big Shot. May 4th, we get Star Wars, The Bad Batch. May 14th, The New High School Musical. June 11th, finally the announcement for Loki. You also mentioned too that we're getting getting
Chippendale.
Thank you, Chippendale.
Something Park Life, and what else is it? There's something another one that's coming.
Monsters at Work.
Pixar's making an actual television show called Monsters at Work.
And I'm looking at it right now. Billy Crystal and John Goodman are attached. They're both coming for it. So cool. What are you looking forward to and all that?
I kind of want to watch the Mighty Ducks. I'm not gonna lie to you. Here's the thing: if Joshua Jackson shows up in a cameo, or like they get like Kenan Thompson or one of those guys to show up, I'm gonna lose my shit.
Knuckle fuck time.
Right? Knuckle fuck time. But honestly, like I'm really excited about the Bad Batch getting more into that like Clone Wars series. I'm a sucker for anything Star Wars, but obviously it's Loki and it's Winter Soldier and Falcon, like those. That's what I'm here for. I'm curious to see what the Chippendale thing is. It's not Chippendale Rescue Rangers, but it is a Chippendale show. But yeah, I'm here for Star Wars and Marvel, and I'll watch the other ones if I get some time.
All right. I'm on board with you on that. All right. Well, that's it for this episode of Versus. We're way over time, but we've had a good time this time. And I'm going to make sure Tyler contributes next time to some of the questions that make sure he infiltrates some angry ones in there in between the ones that we already agree on. Because there are a lot of big topics. And strangely enough, we start the show and we seem to agree on a lot of the new things. So you're right. We may have to go back in time. But as always, if you're interested in Versus or the other Project Nerd podcasts, head on over to wherever you get your podcast and search Project Nerd. You can find multiple channels, or just head on over to projectnerd.com/podcast. That's project-nerd.com/podcast. All right, Tyler, we're signing out. Till next time.
I'll see you guys.